This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey everybody, Jason here. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Mrs. Deirdre Jones from Toledo's Edward H. Smith School of Professional Sales. I will get better by the part three. I will get all that down. Deirdre, are you ready to talk about persuasion and the sales process?
Yep, good to go.
And of course, anyone who tuned into part one, you know that we already were, and she was diving into it. And there's so much that we can talk about because that's where it really starts to come together. For people who want to find out more about your background, they can see in the show notes, they could listen to part one. You have an MBA from University of Toledo, information science, a bachelor's in business administration, folk in the marketing, professional sales focused. You've trained thousands of students and hundreds and hundreds of working professionals. So like this wide scope of things that you're doing and where you've come from. So let's dive into sales process. And you were talking about it. And one of the things that was interesting is I was bringing up authenticity, and then you were talking about the sales process, but then wrapping it back to the authenticity, especially with the probing questions. Like one of the last things you were talking about was the fact that sometimes what salespeople do is they ask questions, and then the potential buyer is giving some half answers or non-answers or one-word answers, and then, you know, encouraging salespeople to dive more into that. How do you build that skill into them and or encourage them to do that, instead of what I see a lot of is where people are afraid to ask questions because they're afraid, like, of either being told no or feels confrontational, or they're worried it might upset somebody?
Yeah, no. And that's, it's once again, it goes back to just like understanding things from other people's perspective, you know? So I know like when we're working with our students and they're working on like a spin cycle, right? Or whatever their question is, I always ask the students, it's like, what's your questioning thread, right? Like ultimately, why are you asking the questions? What does it connect to? Because at the end of the day, it needs to connect to how is this going to ultimately help the customer? Because that's what's going through their head, right? And the nice thing is like when you ask questions, the beautiful thing about asking someone a question is the customer thinks of an answer. I always say, when you ask a question, the customer thinks of an answer. So questions are incredibly powerful because the customer, even though they're always thinking of an answer, they may or may not actually articulate it, right? They might not actually say it out loud, right? And so that's, it's important to pay attention to nonverbals, you know, when they're asking questions and things. And so we encourage the students to like, look, like when you're asking them their question, when you're asking the questions, you need to think about how does this impact the customer and like what it is that fundamentally they're trying to accomplish, right? So what are those business positives and or business negatives, those solutions? And then we can, you know, have that conversation thread to do the math backwards, so to speak, on how we're going to get to those pieces of information and those insights to figure out if the customer is going to be a good fit, you know. And obviously you would want to ask things that are relative to, you know, what your organization happens to sell, you know, and what your organization happens to be strong or have a unique point in. But because that's also part of the qualification process, right, is you want to make sure that you're talking to customers that are going to be a good fit. And some customers, even if they are a good fit, they might not be a good fit today. They might be a good fit in a couple of weeks, a couple of months, a couple of years. So
kind of skipping in the sales process, because let's talk about it from the buyer side. I think this would be fun because I know you have some opinions and thoughts on this. What is it that the buyer wants from a sales professional and especially a sales process?
Yeah, I mean, every buyer is going to be a little bit different in terms of what they want. And some of it's going to be dependent on like how their role is set up and what their key metrics are going to be and stuff. But I think what a lot of buyers are looking for is someone who can just help them sell internally, right? Because they have this job, this internal job of then going to another person or a committee of people, formal or informal, in their organization to say like, this is what we should do and here's why, and this is how it's going to work, and then here's how we're going to implement and steward this. And they need and they want, a lot of them need and want help in that process. And it doesn't necessarily look like we're going to do a joint presentation or have like joint sessions. It could, right? But it could also just be like you doing coaching sessions with this individual or with this team of people, right? Giving them information, some data analysis that they could use, a case study that they could use, or, hey, let's run a simulation and see how this turns out. Let me help you with a proof of concept. or just someone that they could, you know, call, email, text because they've got questions like, oh, I'm nervous about, you know, talking to so-and-so, or I know we're going to get pushed back from this one department. Okay, cool. Let's talk about that. Like, why do you think they're going to be pushing back? What are their concerns going to be? And it's sometimes it's just, it's like a coaching relationship that you would have with different key players, you know, with the buying organization to help them figure out how they're going to get stuff done. And so I think that's what a lot of them are just looking for, because it's like, how can you make their job easier? Right. And even though buyers today have way more access to information than buyers previously, there's also less, like, way too much information, and it's like information overload, you know, and helping them to understand what information is reliable, what information isn't, how to prioritize it, how to go through it. Because like, even when I talk with organizations, you know, they're like, oh, you know, I just found out about university sales programs, or I already know that I need to be talking to university sales programs, you know, and like they've heard, you know, the stats from Sales Education Foundation that students at a university sales program ramp up 50% faster and the retention is 30% higher than their non-university trained counterparts. Okay, cool. Like, they know that, but do they understand how to pick which university sales program they want to partner with, or how they're going to, like, approach that? Because they see all this information, all these data points, but, you know, they just assume, like, should I go to whoever's the biggest? Should I go to whoever has this? So that's like, well, you know, like, let's talk about what your needs and what are your goals and, like, where is your business operated? What kind of, you know, so I always end up just asking a bunch of questions about what their goals are, what they're trying to hire for, what is their sales process and their organization? How do they go to market? What does their sales career lattice look like? And if they don't understand the difference between a career lattice and a career ladder, okay, let's have a conversation about that. You know, 'cause we're training our students on a lattice, not a ladder. And so it's just, you know, helping them to understand, they like sort through the information so that they're talking. Because there's been companies where I'm like, you know, you shouldn't even be working with us. Like, actually, the best university for you would be this other one over here, or you should do this other national competition. Because I want to make sure people are talking to the right resources that are going to help. And sometimes it's me and sometimes it's not. So, and just also helping our students to understand the same thing is that it's you can't sell everyone, and nor should you. There's times you need to refer someone somewhere else. And there's other times where there's customers like, you don't want that. And you're just like, I'm going to cut you loose, you know, or sometimes you cut them loose because they're just not ready, and then they'll be back. And then they'll come back to you because they realize that you were right.
And so with that, especially with, you know, looking at buyers and obviously knowing that not all of them are the same, they don't all have the same needs. But you know, that especially, professional buyers, right? In the B2B space, there's, you know, rarely it's just one decision maker who's mm-hmm. involved. So it is a very applicable, especially if you can sell to a bigger group internally than when mm-hmm. you do get those more simpler ones, it's obviously easier. So what process do you like to teach, or how do you teach, or what are you teaching from a fundamental sales process that's fairly universal as these students go out in the world and work for different organizations?
Yeah. So part of what we talk about is, you know, an ideal account profile, and that there's the quantitative, but also the qualitative aspect to the account, you know, so looking at things, you know, 'cause you want to look at the quantitative stuff, right? Where it's like, do their product or service, their solution needs mapped to what you have, you know, what's the degree of fit and things along those lines. But then we're also looking at, you know, take a look at the organization structure, right? What does their management or leadership team look like? Is that conducive? What's their culture look like? How do they look and interact with different vendors, right? So even just simple asking, like, what does their buying process look like? You know, because if they're trying to be super transactional about it, and you've got a buyer that's like, I just need the sharp pencil deal, and just tell me like your best number, I don't care about the other stuff. It's like, well, maybe we're not going to be a good fit, or I can give you a number, but, you know, the number, I understand that there's other things that you're not going to get, you know, or that aren't, it's important for the customer to understand what is and isn't included in that process, right? Because it's, you know, once again, it's like, well, what's going through their head? Like, why are they so obsessed with the number, and why just that number? And do they understand how that, like, what else goes into that one number, right? Because you've got whatever the product or service happens to be, there's support, there's, you know, like, they're paying for a certain amount of expertise. And so it's helping the students to understand that they need to look at, you know, culture, also take a look at like geography. Where is that company at in terms of like their life cycle, but also the customer's customer, like who are they serving? You know, because obviously this customer that you're selling to, they exist for a reason. So who's their customer, right? And so sometimes that can be a big eye opener for them, is like once they start asking the customer about their customer, it's like, well, why are you in business? You know, who are you serving? How are you, what's your value add? And so, I mean, and obviously certain things that you sell are more or less strategically important or are part of the mix. That's also part of what we're, you know, helping the students to figure out is, you know, we run them through like a Challe assessment against the six most common selling profiles that are out there. So they can see if they're going to be a strong, moderate, or low fit for different types of selling roles so that they can, you know, once again, make educated and confident decisions among different types of environments that they should or shouldn't be in. You know, cause some folks, you know, I mean, cause like, even when I've challied myself, like I am a terrible fit for indirect selling. Terrible. You know, you could talk to my husband, he'll tell you, no, the woman likes some degree of control. You would not want her in an indirect situation, right? But if you're talking territory consultative system sales, I'm a really strong fit. There's just a lot of things that organically are in my sales DNA that I just organically do. And so helping the students to get that insight into some of their sales DNA and their wiring, and that report's nice because then they can also get some coaching recommendations when they have low or moderate fits in certain things. But it's also a good way to help students also understand where, in what sorts of situations would they be good managers and leaders? Because if someone's score is like high, but not like crazy high, because like on certain things, like my sales score is too high in some areas, I would not be a good leader. I would not be a good manager or a good coach because it's so reflexive for me, so automatic. I'm not even aware that I'm doing it. Or if I am aware that I'm doing with it, I'm just going so fast. Whereas if my score is more moderate, I'm good at it, but I'm more conscious of what I'm doing. And so I would be a better leader or a better coach in that respect because I'm more purposeful in a mindful sort of a way. So it would make me a better leader or coach in certain types of selling situations. And so it's just helping the students to understand what are those different sorts of situations, you know, the questions you can ask an organization in terms of like how they go to market, what they sell. So.
I love it. And then the Challe assessment that you mentioned, I know that you and I spoke about this before, when we spoke initially, that's Challey, correct?
Yes. Challey. Okay. Yep. So yeah. And sales Perfect. Education, cause the founder of the Challe and the founder of the Sales Education Foundation, it's the same individuals and stuff. And so schools that are with Sales Education Foundation get the Challe, but they also, Challe is also available to other organizations to go and get that to help with their sales force or use it as a way to assess folks that they might be looking to hire.
All right. So, and I'll put the link for that in the show notes. It's definitely fascinating because I think, you know, these assessments are helpful in kind of guiding. And I love, you know, especially the stuff that you're focused on, which is, okay, you might be, this test might say something about here, but also how are you on adaptability? And then, you know, what's your openness to change and where does it help? And, you know, where can you improve? And, you know, where does it not make sense? One thing that you brought up when you were talking about just kind of like a scenario there with, you know, talking about the customers is when they get stuck on, or not customers, it's like prospects, when they get stuck on a number where they're like, here's our number, give me your lowest number, here's what I need. Or where you only pay this for this. What's your experience or research or insight say, like why that happens? What leads to that kind of buyer scenario?
Yeah, I mean, typically there's going to be two reasons where they get fixated on the price. I mean, part of it could be like, that's just legit all they have. Like, it's kind of like, this is what we have to work with. And they're like desperately trying to afford or get to that place. But in other cases, it's about, you know, and this is where we spend most of our time with the students, is understanding and identifying value and really value in the sense of like total cost of ownership, because there is the amount that you pay now, you know, because the way I always phrase things with our students and with my own children, I'm like, pay the bill now or pay the bill later. And if you're going to pay the bill later, you better be ready to pay with interest, you know. And it's, you know, understanding all the different pieces and parts that go into it, because it's like, look, like there's the line item for like, you know, my solution personally, but what about everything else? You know, and even like when I've worked with the university and other purchases that when I've been on the buy side with the university, and it's like, okay, well, like here's how much the software is going to cost, but what about how much money are we going to spend on hardware? How much we're going to spend on annual support? How much we're going to spend on other people doing things, because now certain people are empowered and other people aren't empowered? What's going to happen from a time perspective? You know, and I had a prospect who never ultimately ended up becoming a customer. And eventually they also went out of business, because this was a client that I just walked away from at one point. I was like, this is ridiculous. You know, they had a call center and they kept having all this downtime, right? And they were so fixated with me on like this number. And I'm like, but you have like unplanned downtime, and you have like, they had like 70 or 100 people, like they have nothing to do. Mm-hmm. For like unpredictable extended periods of time. So then they wanted to see what the vendor was going to come up with, because they didn't want to pay our consultants to come in to like, you know, fix things and or to you know, recommend that they needed to actually like completely replace. And so I was like, okay, I'll give you the time. Go ahead, go to like the tech conference for, you know, that particular vendor and see what sort of fixes they're going to have for you. You know, meanwhile, you know, 4 to 6 months goes by, connect with them again later. And, you know, their vendor didn't have any more news for them. And, you know, and it's just like, well, there's, you know, but like, you still have all this money you're spending. Now you've got planned downtime, so it's not as much downtime, right? But it's helping people to understand, you know, the short, moderate, and long-term implications of their decisions. Because while they might think they don't have the money, once you start, you know, forecasting a little bit further into the future, all of a sudden it's like, but then you're spending money here and you're spending money there, or you could be saving money here, saving money there. And so sometimes it's just, once again, about coaching people on what's the time frame in which we're going to be measuring this ROI. So
one of the things when I'm thinking about sales processes and all the stuff that you outlined for that ideal account profile, one of the biggest things, and you mentioned this in part one, was this concept of helping that potential buyer deal with change. One thing I know is that the biggest thing you're up against is people's resistance, fear, or challenges around change. And that's really what it comes down to at the deepest, most fundamental level. And so how do you address that? How do you help, you know, salespeople understand that and or address it and or build a process to deal with that?
Yeah. Change is a booger. It is a booger. Cause I remember the first time I lost to status quo when I was in sales, and I like just the humiliation of going to the office. And so my boss is like, so did you get the business? And I'm like, no. And he goes, who did? And I said, no one, you know, and it's like, congratulations, I lost to nothing. How embarrassing. But that's, it's really common in sales, is to lose to status quo, to lose to nothing. And it's a tough pill. Part of it, it's about, you know, making sure that you're understanding, like, the talking to the right people, what's important to them, helping that the customer, the prospect, to really, you know, understand like what's in it for them on a personal level, at a departmental level, at an organizational level, and also at the industry level. Like, what are all of those different gateways, so to speak, where you can impact and influence change, and what's that going to mean for them? Because maybe they start to realize that it's bigger than them. And in a lot of cases, it is just bigger than, you know, the one person or the couple of people that might be on a committee or that are making a decision. And once they start to realize the other savings or the extension of the impact, because then all of a sudden they realize, well, if this is also going to impact over here, maybe they can help without the budget. Right. You know, or maybe, you know, they can be a part of the implementation team too, because they start to realize, you know, the broader impact that something could have. And that's what gets really exciting, is when people start to realize that a lot of times these decisions don't have just one little area of impact, right? They have, there's this domino effect on the organization. And so helping them to understand the domino impact. And sometimes it's, you've got to ask the tough questions, you know, and not just the impact and the implication and need payoff or whatnot to them, but also others in their organization, other departments. And this is where you leverage your subject matter expertise, right? And sales is by asking, you know, really educated questions, because, you know, because sometimes the customer, they don't realize it, or they're like, oh, great, you know, now I got to come clean, you know, or maybe they don't come clean like right then and there. They're just kind of like, oh God, like I've really got to get this other person on the call now, because I don't want to be the one shouldering everything now, right? And so it helps you to get other people involved, And, you know, because change, depending on the situation, it can be a really heavy lift. And if you can get, I mean, you don't want to have too many cooks in the kitchen, but if you can get enough of the right stakeholders involved, then it's more of a team effort on that change. And it's more palatable and easier to go through, because if people feel like they've got to go through this themselves and they're like the champion all by themselves, that can be really intimidating. It's daunting, you know, and especially since like at some organizations, we all know people, it's like, there's like that one person or there's a couple of people, like they're the ones championing and leading the charge on like so many different things. And like, they're just done. They're done. They want someone else to help out. And, but that's also, you know, where sometimes sales, it's kind of like project management, you know, like you're helping the customer and stewarding through with this. And that's something too, depending on the type of sales role in the organization, you know, some salespeople, you know, they're going to be heavier on the salary, lighter on the commission, because they're going to take more of an active project management role in something depending on what it is that they're selling. Whereas maybe their compensation, if it's more of those like handoff situations, then, you know, maybe it's more of a balance or more heavier on the commission because someone else is going to project manage that. But I think buyers, you know, they want that sense that this isn't just going to be a transaction, that you're going to be a preferred supplier or a partner or a strategic ally, you know, somewhere in that gradient to help them with stewarding that change, because they want to know that you're also going to be accountable too. And that this isn't just, okay, cool, you have whatever it is that I sold you, good luck. They want to know that you're going to be there to help out, even when if things go bad or go sideways at some point.
So where do you see salespeople really messing that up? And I don't know how to say this best, like not just like not helping someone change, but making it where someone literally does not want to change.
Where do salespeople mess up in?
Yeah. How have you seen salespeople mess that up where the goal or the outcome is the buyer has to make a change, right? And embrace something new, and salespeople in their process, in their style, in their conversations, just messing that up and making it impossible.
Yeah. I think where the salespeople typically mess up is like, they cease to care. They cease to care because, and the ceasing to care, it's not necessarily coming from like a bad place, because some salespeople, God bless them, they're just like, they have some pretty lofty goals that the organization has set for them, or whatever it is that they're selling just has a lot of repetition in it and stuff. Cause I don't want it to act like the salesperson. It's like, oh, well, you just didn't care enough. You know, it's like, it's a you problem. There are definitely some organizational things from like a cultural perspective and how they handle compensation and coaching and things like that. Cause sometimes it's not necessarily a failure of the sales professional, it's a failure of the sales organization and their enablement to help support them. Cause I think where it falls down is it's like, sometimes it's the salesperson. Cause it's just like, God, I'm just looking to get this closed. Like, I don't care if you buy or not, you know, go ahead. Like if your organization messes up, like, what do I care? Right. So it's like, there is something to say about a salesperson that just doesn't care. But then there's also to be something that says, well, the sales organization doesn't care. And it's an organizational thing because they haven't properly trained, enabled, supported their sales team to have the right data, to have the right implementation support team, to have the right R&D going into the development to make sure that certain things aren't going to be a problem after the customer starts using things, right? So there is something to be said where there's an organizational challenge where the salesperson is just kind of like up against a wall, like too many things on back order, you know, or other things. It's like there are sometimes the salesperson is just not in a great spot, and it's more on the organization than on the sales professional. So like those are probably like two of the biggest things where they just don't care, or it's the sales org. But then in other cases, it's the salesperson, frankly, and this just happens, like you get sloppy, right? Like none of us are perfect, right? And so sometimes it's a function of they weren't talking to the right person. They didn't ask all the right questions. They didn't probe deep enough for clarification. They only sold on like part of the value. Cause like, oh, I'm just going to get this sold. We can worry about the rest of the stuff later. They glossed over objections. You know, there's all these different, you know, checkpoints, you know, throughout the sales process where it's like, yeah, you might've sold it, but maybe you sold the wrong thing, or like the customer's mindset and their expectations. you know, because one of the things my first sales manager taught me is that sales is about customer expectation management. And that was, that's always really stuck with me is, you know, managing the expectations of the customer, because especially when I was selling, you know, like software and consulting services, you know, it's like, technically we could do anything, right? Like, of course we could build that. Of course we could, you know, but it's like, but in order to get to that, what would that actually look like? Right. You know, like how much effort, how much, you know, time, materials and stuff. So it's, you know, sometimes it's a function of they didn't properly manage customer expectation as they were going.
It makes sense. And I think that's so valuable when you boil it down to a successful sales professional, right? Not just someone who can sell and make a lot of money. That's one thing. It's different when it's a successful sales professional who's mm-hmm. managing customer expectations of mm-hmm. what they're going to get and then making sure that's actually what they get. And then, mm-hmm. you know, playing the long game with those people. So I right. love it. And I love what you said about, you know, the when salespeople don't care, and it's either they're going through the motions. Sometimes they're desensitized because they hear the same stories all the time. And they're just like, right. just assume everyone's got the same thing, is they just tune people out if they're going through that. A lot of times it's the organization, like you said, where the organization just doesn't care or doesn't help them care because they're not giving them the tools, or they're expecting the salespeople to play a numbers game. And so they just see them as commodities, and then mm-hmm. the salespeople are just going to be an extension of that, and then playing the numbers game with people. And that's what you get if you've ever yeah. been a buyer or a potential buyer mm-hmm. being treated as a number by a salesperson. It's coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's usually what happens, right? You can always tell the relational versus the numbers game salespeople.
Yeah. I mean, it's important to be able to have the confidence and the courage to challenge the customer sometimes. Cause you know, cause there's been times where it's just kind of like, you know, the customer is just full of it. Like, you know, you're just like, this is like, that is the most ridiculous thing. That is the most ridiculous thing. But depending on the situation, like how much education, knowledge, insight, experience you have, and then the relationship with the customer is to sometimes do that pushback and, you know, ask the tough question or present the information. Say like, so when this happens, what are we going to do? Right. So we're not going to move forward, but then what happens next? Right. And so it's, mm-hmm. you know, and being, having the courage to ask those tough questions and stuff. So, cause it's sometimes the customers need to get professionally and respectfully slapped around a bit, you know, cause yeah. like,
well, and that's what I used to tell people when I'm training them is my sales style is that I care about people, right? I yeah. want the best for them. I want to leave them in a better place.
Yeah.
Many times it's kind of like that friend who you know has a problem and keeps making the wrong decisions, whether it's right. relationships or something else. Sometimes you got to hit them with the truth stick. I'm like, I appreciate all my potential customers. I'm hugging them. Sometimes I'm hugging them and kicking them in the butt. Sometimes yeah. I'm hugging them and picking them up to carry them across the finish line because they just want to fight and kick and scream like a yeah. kid. But yeah, like you have to do it from that place of care, which is totally different from, I got to mm-hmm. sell you because I got to hit my numbers right. and it's me versus you. Right. Like that's that's a totally different mode. Which I'm excited to talk about in part three when we get into the future of sales, which is really in the futures now, of course, as they say, but like what buyers are looking for more of, what sellers can be doing more of, where does technology fit into this, and all of this stuff building on what we've been talking about. And so I think this is a great place to end whatever we could on this conversation of processes. I know that we could keep going, especially based on all the stuff that you've built and you've seen yeah. and you've done. I appreciate you being here. For people tuning in, again, it'll be in the show notes, but if they want to find out more, obviously, about the sales program there, they want to get in touch with you, they can do it through the sales.utoledo.edu website. They can also find you on LinkedIn, Deirdre Jones. Again, both of those links will be in the show notes. Deirdre, thanks for being here and sharing all this. I know I'm getting a lot out of this, taking notes. So many things that you covered that's like just, I completely agree with, like, even just the change is a booger. I love that line. I'm just thinking like, yeah, that's a very nice way to put it. But I appreciate you being here, and I'm super excited for our third part of our conversation.
All right. Thank you. Happy to help.
And for everyone tuning in, as always, I appreciate you being here. Part of why I do this, the main part of why I do this, is to bring this out to people in the world, right? It's the awareness. And Deirdre even mentioned it earlier in this episode where people just don't even realize these programs exist. And then all of a sudden they want to get involved, but what's the right fit? More so, I just want to raise awareness because this is truly, as I've learned, where sales is going to change from. Like higher education, teaching it, putting students out there in the world, and then moving towards something that's actually a profession for the first time, in my opinion, is the only way that sales is going to change from the dirty word because people are just doing whatever they want to an actual profession that people want help in. And that takes all of us doing our part. So I appreciate you being here. Hopefully you got some value, whether you're tuning in, watching, listening, reading the transcript, whatever that might be for you. I appreciate it. And thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.